This is my job, I will not quit it. Pulled me out the depths when I thought that I was finished. Yeah, I question if I could go the distance. That's just the work, regardless of who's listening. Listening, listen. See, I was meant to be a warrior.
Hello, hello, hello. What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio. We're back in the studio. Super excited to be here on our second episode. Moving ahead, we got some special guests in the house. We got Adam Ray Set.
What's up?
And we got Douglas Darby in the house.
Hello.
Hello, hello. So, man, guys, we're up in Green Bay here, kicking it off, I think, in the right way. New radio station, new show, some same people.
Got some changes.
Got some big changes. Sometimes change is uncomfortable, right?
But it's good. I don't feel uncomfortable at all.
No, this is probably the coolest, probably one of the coolest positions I've ever held, right? Like, just get to hang out with you guys, have some really great conversation, and maybe that conversation would even help make a difference. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit what's going on in the national recovery movement, and then we're also going to give Douglas Darby, one of the best recovery advocates in the United States, a chance to tell a little bit of his story in the second half. We're also going to cover some major news topics right away. Way in the beginning, but before we jump all into that, I know some of you guys have been following this recovery podcast, and of course before it was head up by Jesse and Adam Ray Set, and there's been some big changes. They gracefully handed the station over to me, and of course now it's called Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and we look to accomplish a lot of the same goals, but I wanted to ask you, Adam, what do you think, man?
This is awesome. I'm glad there's like a lot more role definition now. It's going to give me an opportunity to introduce some more music and artists that have positive music that are like in recovery or support recovery events.
Absolutely.
And not even, I mean, even if you just take the recovery out of it, bring in artists that have a positive message behind their music. And that's kind of what I've been a part of in the last, I would say, about a year now.
Yeah, man.
With my company.
Why don't we talk about that? You know, you've been working with artists, man. You've been in the music scene. So, like, name some of the artists that maybe you've worked with in the past. Big names, local names, whatever you want.
Yeah, so Capadonna from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Nice.
Done shows with, you know, when you ask me, my mind goes blank.
Twista, right? Where Twista was in the house?
Twista was here. Mystical from No
Paul Wall,
Soldiers.
Right?
Paul Wall. you know, I've worked with a lot of bigger names. And
then, what about DMX? I thought you were going to get DMX on the spot.
Oh, man. You know, he likes to take people's money and run.
Oh,
so,
man. Now we're going to have to have him on the show.
He's supposed to be in Minneapolis this month, but I don't think that's when we're going to take the risk on.
Yeah. Man, D had such a great musical career for so long.
Well, he actually was like turned a lot of his music into Christian music, too. If you
also somebody that struggles with addiction, right?
Yep, and with his addiction issues that he's had in his past, so he would actually be a good artist to bring around.
Right. Well, we'll work on that.
If he's on the path.
We'll work on that. He was like one of my favorites back in the day. I think it was only one person that I saw that went fan crazy over. Like, I just was like, DMX. I saw him. He walked right by me in the stadium in Chicago, and I tried to like put my hand on his shoulder, and his big bodyguard that was way bigger than I was just like pretty much ripped my arm off. You know what I mean? He's a lot shorter, man.
He is.
Like, yeah, I think he's shorter than I am. And I'm like, well, we don't need to talk about that, but
now he really ain't going to come. He's like, you talk about how short I was.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, why don't we actually, man, what do you think about the artists that are out there? I mean, they're talking about, you know, a lot of times talking about drug use, you know, they're talking about, and maybe have you seen it where maybe even artists are struggling with?
Yeah. And you know, the thing is these artists, like any artist, but you know, I pretty much do hip hop for the most part, but you know, there's such an image you have to live up to, and it is the mainstream media image that they're trying to live up to. And that's like, I'm hardcore, nothing can bring me down, I can do these drugs, and it ain't gonna affect me. And, you know, that was part of the reason why I kind of stepped away from what I was doing, because I was in the trenches. I was traveling all over the country, too. You know, staying with these artists in their hotel rooms and houses, or they're staying at my house when they come into town. And, you know, it was really, it's drugs was surrounded by everything, you know, or surrounded everything. And then the alcohol. So, you know, alcohol.
Yeah. Got that VIP lounge.
Yeah. I mean, VIP lounge, bottle service, you know, it all revolved around that. So, To kind of get away from that in the last year has really been a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was scared myself.
Right, because it put your recovery at risk too, right?
And in the back of my mind, you know, I'm still dealing with the insecurities that I had about stepping away, like not looking cool or, you know, not being that tough guy that, with the image that I tried to build for so long. I mean, for five years, that's the image I was trying to build, and I was the tough guy. And to be vulnerable and come back and say, no, man, I was having issues with these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I'm going to shy away from this show or not do this because it really just isn't something that I believe in anymore.
And do you think with some of that attitude, and do you think artists are actually starting to have that attitude too? You know, maybe stepping away from that lavish lifestyle that's filled with potentially alcohol and drugs. And I mean, I'm seeing, you know, rock artists or musicians actually speaking out on like, man, I lost a friend, we lost a great bandmate, you know, because of an overdose or something like that. So it seems like artists are actually speaking out a little bit more.
And what I've found too is it's you know, it's still them trying to paint this image. So a lot of artists that I've met behind the scenes, super awesome guys.
Yeah.
And then you hear their music and it kind of is like different than what they really are as a person. And I do think there is a change coming though, where artists are really trying to put out realistic thoughts and ideas in their music now, instead of, you know, going down that mainstream media path, you know, where they're trying to paint that image of hardcore and, you know, the tough guy. But it's got a long ways to go. It's got a long ways to go.
I mean, think if like artists and hip hop artists especially united and actually started speaking a positive message.
Man.
Wouldn't that make a huge difference, like a cultural difference in communities all across the United States and maybe even all around the world, right?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is when you talk about how does that mainstream focus bleed into everyday society. You talk about a lot of, okay, so we're in small town America, right? Where does that line get blurred on what is entertainment and what is actual reality? Because I was also brought up on 80s rock, and that was very much Sunset Strip.
Right, the Motley Crue.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So I don't think that, I think we're just in a different generation of what we talk about entertainment. To what actual reality was. And the way my mom always brought it up to me, and yes, I am someone in long-term recovery, is you always have to understand that that is entertainment. The first time that I was ever even allowed to swear was when I was singing a song. So that was a big thing to me, but it also broke down.
Got away with it.
Right, but it was also broke down as looking at it from my parents as a parenting level was, you know, but this is entertainment, so there is a place for it, and I think there is a place. I like the show Breaking Bad. I like gangster rap. I like those things.
Yep.
But yeah, I think, again, the education still needs to go around it. I always joke, like, Breaking Bad is a great show. And yes, it's a show nothing about anything else than the dealing and selling and smoking of methamphetamine. The reality is, none of those people, those Hollywood actors, would have gorgeous smiles, okay?
Right.
And I think
they wouldn't last how many seasons, right?
Exactly. That entertainment value truly is.
Right. So to the change, right, is really like the power of each individual, what you're saying. So just really briefly, why don't you talk about that change that's already happening with some of the efforts that you're doing with Chris and also Braille?
Yeah. I've worked with over 120 hip hop artists probably in the last 5 years, just in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, I'm working with like three artists right now that really have a positive message, that are living up to the things that they're saying in their music. But it's been great. And these guys are really stepping up. And I mean, we're going to bars too and still doing some of the same shows, and these guys are still delivering their message, and I actually see a better reception. You know, it's like there's a dude that goes up before him talking about popping bottles and getting with this guy's chick.
Right.
And then my
same
guys,
message, right?
Right. And then not my original guys go up, and those are the same dudes that are like sitting there watching these positive artists and like showing them love afterwards, saying, wow, you know, like, you don't get to hear that stuff.
Yeah.
And neither do these guys. And it's almost like, you know, hip hop is a lot of mimicking these days.
Mm-hmm.
So they see what they think is going to make them popular or what's going to maybe make them money. But, you know, they don't get to see the positive hip hop star actually do things and like rock a crowd. So yeah. I'm super happy that I get to bring that to venues. Like we're kind of jumping in the lion's den and I ain't afraid. I've been there for 5 years already and it's cool to bring something different and it's cool to see it affecting people in the crowd and having people come up afterwards and be like, wow, man, you know, like that music really meant a lot to me. How can I make a change?
Mm-hmm.
And we've had that happen already. So to have that happen and me, myself be in recovery and these guys that I'm working with deliver such a positive message, no cursing in their music. I mean, they get it done without doing the things that most people think they need to do with hip hop.
Right. And it sounds good. And they get the crowd going.
Yeah, you guys got to see it.
Yeah. At Solutions 0.0, I mean, all you guys, even you, you know, getting up on the mic and hyping the crowd. Yeah. I think you were actually in the crowd and doing your thing, man. Yeah. I didn't know you had such talent.
Well, it's crazy because I am a pretty quiet dude unless I really get to know somebody, but you put me on stage and I got a job to do, so I go on stage and I do my job. So whether I'm hosting a show or you know, hyping up the crowd or backing up one of my artists on their music, like I'm up there for a reason, and you're going to see a whole different Adam Reset when I'm on stage. So.
Yeah, I didn't really recognize. I didn't even know you just came out and you're right next to, you know, Chris and Braille, and you're doing your thing, and all three of you were up there. It was just such an epic moment. Just
it was awesome.
Solutions 0.0 party was so great, and I hope we continue to work together and do those kind of things. Man, we could do some big things even up here at the Rush Center, and I'll be talking little things like that. And
Working on that.
So, yeah, I mean, thank you. And thank you for coming in and still, you know, sticking by my side, and I know
I want to be here, man.
Right, yeah, you know,
I wanna be here.
And just for everybody listening out there, so we're gonna share a lot of music, you know, throughout these podcasts, whether it's in the intro or the outro. Some of it's gonna be national artists, but some of it's gonna be localized artists. We really want to focus on those local artists that are bringing a positive message into their community, you know, a message of change. You know, everybody does want to talk about like this lavish lifestyle, and a lot of times people don't talk about how that actually negatively impacts you or your family, right? So there's some artists that are out there making a difference on a daily basis, putting out some amazing music. Adam, you get a chance to work with some of those artists, and you're probably going to bring them in the house here too. You also wanted to do like a music discovery, talk about other artists that are out there spreading a positive message, and that we may not be able to get in the studio maybe someday.
Not even in our state, but I already know we have an artist, Buku One from Hieroglyphics. He next week, Friday, we have a show with him. And he basically teaches kids how to use their artistic talents and turn that into a business so they can, you know, supply their life with what they need
through
that business. So, you know, having a guy like that come on and talk, like these guys are already, it's like they're philanthropists in a way.
Yeah.
You know, they travel for nothing, and they come and speak their message, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get a good positive message out to our youth especially.
And they got the style and the relatability to the kids. They're repping cool brands. I mean, they're repping a great message, giving back to the community, supporting those in need. That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. Well, thanks, Adam. I just want to, you know, I really do appreciate your time and your expertise that you're going to be bringing to this podcast, and it's great to work alongside you, man.
Absolutely, and I have to thank you guys. It's been a pleasure. Working with you guys and just having the ability to stay involved, and you guys leaving that door open for me to be involved. I'm right here anytime you guys need me. So
that's awesome, man. Thank you so much, man. All right, cool. Well, man, there's been some great conversation. Doug, I wanted to just bring up this big conversation that happened recently, and I think you would be perfect to talk around this subject. So a friend of ours, Veronica, sat down right next to Macklemore at the White House 2 days ago to talk about addiction awareness and the prescription drug epidemic in the United States. And of course, the drug czar was there, Michael B., and he was there talking about, you know, a variety of solutions. But man, look how far the recovery movement has come. I mean, what was it? Macklemore was with President Obama not that long ago, spreading addiction awareness. Other recovery groups were meeting with the president. And now we have a whole panel of individuals that are being nationally broadcasted by MTV in the White House talking about the recovery movement, talking about the importance of sharing your story, talking about the needed solutions and changes. What do you think about that, man?
I think it's exciting on a lot of different levels, and it does need to have that credit where credit is due. here is the people going against status quo or what is known to be mainstream. And yes, it is that power of the people that rise up, that just go out and listen to the people. I know we say it time and time again, and sometimes it gets even lost in the shuffle. Our people are dying. Our people are crying out. The system is broken. The system never worked. It's all those cliche things, but again, they're cliche because they speak the truth. What needs to happen, though, is there has to be a united front, and it needs to, again, be that roundtable discussion, both on local levels and national levels, of everyone sitting down and having a voice of saying what's going to work. I think it's become pretty evident that the status quo, the funding, the treatment, the resources that are available right now aren't enough, that they aren't doing what is needed as a safety concern across the nation.
No.
Public enemy number one, if you will, is this addiction crisis. And anyone that says it's not either needs to recheck their facts or, frankly, needs to get the head out of the sand and truly take a look around on what's going around, not only in your community, but in my community, in many like communities across the nation.
Absolutely.
So celebrities, yeah, are great. The voice of the people in the trenches, people like Adam, people like yourself, Anthony. Like myself, like our team that go out and truly do put that fight, if you will, on the forefront day in and day out. Those are the stories that need to be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to paint a picture for everybody listening and then also you guys. So like you talk about the power of unification of our communities, right? The power of one story, the power of one, and then really going out and making a difference, maybe not being afraid of being different, standing up for what you believe in, and even sharing your story of recovery and talking about how awesome it is to be sober. And that's exactly like how this national broadcast started out. I think one of the first statements made right on the White House floor is like, man, here we are. Talking about being sober at the White House. And how can you not like put a smile on your face and be like, after all the work that maybe even we've done together, or even like after the 30 years of the recovery movement coming and going, like finally, because people are unifying, because people are talking about what needs to be talked about, even if it's uncomfortable. And we can talk more about that later. But like now we're being heard on a pretty high level.
It's uncomfortable.
That's amazing.
It's uncomfortable because it is scary because the recovery movement has been here before. Unfortunately, yeah. It was 30 plus years ago. We're not there though. And I think that's what's so scary is yeah, we're right there at the peak. It's an election year, which is equally as frightening as any other time in the year. But I think it's one of those things where we're not there, and yeah, it is amazing, but we've been here in the past, I think, to understand again what the problem looks like. You say it best, Anthony. I mean, we have been doing the same thing for how many decades now, and nothing's changed.
No.
Nothing's changed. It is exciting, and there is momentum that has been gained that I'm not discrediting. I just don't want to see the finish line, if you will, and slow down.
So I think what the message is, I mean, even things that I've been thinking about to bring to the show or just to our new, you know, tour this year with schools across the country, I think, man, the only reason why you're here, I'm here, all of us are here today, I think is because of the thousands and thousands of students that have supported us. Right? Like have the opportunity to just ride and grind recovery podcasts and actually people listening to us is not because of us. It's because of them. Right. And I think even for people like Veronica and Ben Hagerty, Macklemore, and Michael and all those guys to be at that public panel at the White House is because of the millions, 23 million plus recoveries or people in recovery across the United States are actually starting to have this giant voice that cannot and will not go ignored any longer. And that momentum needs to keep moving forward. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of just even outlets like this podcast is it's not just Douglas Darby's voice. It's not just Anthony Alvarado's voice. It's not just one voice anymore. Now it's we are telling the stories of the kids that have come to us for help or just a shoulder to say they needed help for the first time. it's those stories, I think, that have carried us into the forefront. And I think it's voices like Macklemore, like the other leaders in the recovery community that do have that shining light or that stage to stand on. It's those people that are once again sharing the many voices that need to be shared, the stories of the people that don't have the outlets. It's things just like this podcast, this Rise and Grind, that are going to give that outlet to share that story, regardless of what that story may look like.
Absolutely. So, hey, there is actually a couple, we have a little bit of this first segment left, and I wanted to bring a couple key points that I picked up on from the conversation. So for anybody out there, if you want to go to mtvnews.com or if you want to go to the whitehouse.gov website, you can go ahead and check out that public panel. It actually launched 2 days ago. It's all over social media as well. You can go check out those efforts. But there were some interesting comments made. So while there was like this really great sense of like motivation and momentum and talking about the importance of sharing your story, there's also a supportive action around their criminal justice reform, and there's also an indication for big changes that it needs to take place in the medical community. That's kind of the conversation, right? So Macklemore actually made a comment that there needs to be some social responsibility that each person in recovery holds while they engage with the medical community. So while they're receiving care from the medical providers, they in part need to be honest, open and honest about the struggles they've had with addiction. But as much as I can agree with that, Michael, the drug czar, also immediately commented back. And he said, look, I'm supportive of your comment. I'm supportive of the idea that you should be more open and transparent and vulnerable. But at the same time, it is not our job as individuals in recovery to educate our healthcare providers on recovery or addiction for that matter. How do you feel about that?
I agree with it on both stands. I do agree that as a person in recovery, when I do walk into a hospital setting, that I would be forthcoming with my healthcare provider and letting them know exactly where my medical conditions stem from. It would be no different if I had some sort of allergy to a medication. I would let that be known to a doctor. Mm-hmm. Same thing if I go into a hospital situation, I know that the possibility of me being prescribed some sort of opiate-based medication is possible. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let the doctor know that I have struggled with addiction in the past. Yes. But I have also been in the hospital setting where I have told my healthcare provider, and I am scrutinized, I'm ostracized, and I am not a patient in that clinic anymore. I am now somebody that is seeking pills, possibly. Mm-hmm. I am now someone there that is less than a person. I'll tell you what I'm not. I'm not a person that is viewed in the workforce of the administration as a patient.
Right. So it changes, right? So are you talking about social stigma, right? So somebody's looking at you as maybe a criminal
it's always a stigma.
Right.
It's always comes back down to people being stigmatized.
And you try to be understanding, right? So like even on the other end, like if you were a healthcare provider and you saw people coming in and abusing their services, you'd be a little apprehensive too, right?
Absolutely, but I don't want to portray myself as coming out and saying that every time I've been in a hospital setting that this has been the case. I've had some really awesome healthcare providers where recovery addiction has opened the door to some really amazing conversation. Mm-hmm. I think you use it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
I try, regardless of what I'm in the hospital for, I try my hardest if that is the case, but I do that in everyday life too. Mm-hmm. If I feel that I'm being stigmatized or someone's talking poorly about anything that I believe in, I at least give my 2 cents.
Yeah.
So, but I do it in a way that I try not to be offending or harmful. I try to educate just like I believe anyone should in any topic.
Yeah.
This isn't just addiction that we're talking about. Talking about having an open mind and being a decent human being when you talk to people in the real world. It's about sharing opinions, feelings, and ideas.
Yeah, but when, you know, you come back, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, but you know, you come back and you're like, oh man, I'm going to the doctor. I legitimately probably could use some pain medication. And that addict mentality all of a sudden just clicks, right?
That's I was going to bring that
right?
up.
Like, and then your son like, well, maybe I won't say anything.
Yep.
Maybe.
Speaking of no one's looking. Right?
But that is. That yeah. is the case, right? And instantly you're like, well, maybe. Maybe this is okay.
Right.
And then you take that first pill and what happens? Well, a lot of things could happen, right?
Absolutely.
And we'll talk more about that later. But man, what an interesting conversation. I think it is really clear that there needs to be a cultural shift within the medical community and with all different parts of the community, even the recovery community for that matter. You know, there is stigmatization amongst the recovery community, which we're not going to go into today, but we really, we could talk for days about that. But I mean, there is some huge barriers out there. So the medical community needs to change. The recovery community needs to change. Are there some changes there? Even church community, even the general community, the corporate community. There's a lot of different cultural shifts that need to happen. But what I keep on hearing is that there is more need for education awareness.
Absolutely.
Medical providers and prescribers need to be better educated on addiction and mental health to appropriately address the needs of their patients. And that's not our responsibility. Now, it might be our responsibility to be more open and honest about a recovery. And I think once the social stigma is somewhat eliminated from the community, you'd be very open to go in and say, I am a person in long-term recovery, and you'd be proud about that. And you also say, you know, can we look at some other options besides this type of pain management that encourages opiate use?
I'm always kind of taken off guard because I am so proud of my recovery. I'm always shocked when and not that I want the pat on the back. I just want not to feel like a piece of crap because I'm proud of the last time I ever put a needle in my arm. That's something to me, especially in the healthcare world, that, I mean, I don't understand why it can't be looked at as more of a celebration. We celebrate everything. We celebrate cancer being in remission. We celebrate, the quitting of smoking or negative health effects that we have. We celebrate that. Why still are we not celebrating recovery?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that is the time, right? Or this is the time. Like, this is the tipping point. Whether it's conversation heading up at the White House or at the very forefront of every community, the people in recovery have so much power. And also the people that know somebody in recovery, you have the power to like give a voice, an even stronger voice, and say, I care about this movement because I care about people's lives. And people's lives are being lost. And we need to have, yes, better healthcare insurance, better education awareness in our schools and our medical community. We need to have more support from our corporations. We need to have a better development of prevention strategies, treatment, and recovery support services so we can better address the number one public health issue in America, and that is the disease of addiction. All right, guys. Well, thank you much. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Are you looking to prevent drug use throughout your community? Rise Together is a national movement that is helping to educate and spread awareness on mental health and addiction. After traveling 100,000 miles and speaking to over 120,000 young people in just 3 years, they currently have one of the best school speaking programs in the world. They are now available for school seminars, event speaking, motivational workshops, public panels, and even corporate trainings. Contact them now by visiting www.weallrisetogether.org.
Looking to bring a positive message to your next event? Contact Air and Allies. Air and Allies specializes in bringing entertainment to recovery events, daytime music events, and family-friendly community events. Air and Allies also specializes in bringing artists who bring a positive message to reinforce a better lifestyle to events like Mile of Music. Air and Allies can also help you plan and organize your event to make it successful. To learn more about making your event successful and feature a positive message, email Air and Allies at airandallies@gmail.com or look for the link on this podcast.
Yeah, I wish I never held back. Wish nobody had to sell crack. Then I may have seen my dad a little more. Maybe I could dream a little more. But I still wishing those stars in the sky. Wish a lot of people was alive. And I probably passed on a whole lot of truth, but I know about a whole lot of lies. Man, I wish I had me a time machine. I would tell Martin it was all a dream. And I wish like Ray J back in 06. Get to work cause I got my chick. And I wish like Kells did. If I could change the clock, man, I'd change a lot. And I probably wouldn't be so selfish. I would've gave a lot, man, I'm ashamed of that.
I wish I could have told oh thank you before it got way too late. I wish I would have worked on my jump shot, but time just fades away. I probably wish too much. I know I play less than I should. I know I did too much. I'd take it all back if I could.
Wish I had another chance. Maybe I do better. Maybe I do better. Maybe I do better. Every time I think about all of my mistakes, I just want to turn it around. Be like,
I wish I didn't do it, but I did it. Man, it happened last night. Man, I wish I would try to act like you ain't never lost your sight. And I don't even do it for the money, except when I do it for the money. Trying to find yourself, but you find yourself doing things in the dark, kind of funny. I wish I had 10 more wishes. I swear I got 10 more visions. And life is a game that I can't stop playing. Baby, give me like 10 more minutes. I'm almost finished. I wish I had a little more time. Got a whole lot of goals that I wish I could achieve. I believe I'ma lose my mind. Before I get to those, yeah, I missed the goals, but my shot was off. I can't tell what I lost till I count the cost. But I probably missed my call. Wish I was a little bit taller, wish I was a baller. Then again, every time I get a little money, I'll be looking at the next man like he's smaller. I can't call it. And I wish I didn't go and get high on that one first date. I was all zoned out, paranoid like.
Did you hear that noise?
And I know she probably thinking I'm cray. No pun intended. I wish I repented a little bit quicker. Then again, I ain't pulled a trigger. I know I said I had no regrets, but I sure do wish every chance I get. Go figure.
Wish I had another chance. Maybe I do better. Maybe I do better. Maybe I do better. Every time I think about all of my mistakes, I just want to turn it around. Be like,
all right, all right. This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio. We are back in the studio. I hope you guys enjoyed that song. That's our boy Lecrae just crushing it on the mic. Man, you talk about one of the artists that's out there making a positive difference and speaking his mind and going up against like what the music industry currently stands for and just standing up on the issues that he, you know, cares most about. I think that's where we found a lot of our motivation over the last couple of years. I mean, think about 100,000 miles with you, Douglas Darby, me and you down the street, and this is often the music that would come to the radio.
We just listened to the song along with all of you out in Radio Land. But truly, I don't know if I want to laugh, cry, smash Anthony's computer. Like, there's so much emotion that goes into, I mean, literally all music that we listen to. Lecrae, the amazing guy. Great message, and puts on one hell of a show in concert as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that song in particular, I think it means a lot to both of us. And, you know, I wish I would have maybe done things differently in the past, or I wish I didn't do this, or I wish I didn't do that. I think we all have those kind of wishes, right? The mistakes that we make, the mistakes that we bury ourselves in. There's plenty that I have that I still even make today. You know, definitely not perfect, and that's okay. But man, if there's some things I could change in the past, I may. But at the same time, like, it made us who we are today, right?
Do I wish it was different? Yes. Do I regret it? Do I think that I'm less of a person because it happened? No.
Absolutely. Like, you're out there and realizing that, yeah, while I made a mistake today, I don't have to make one tomorrow.
Right. Right. And even if I do, as Lecrae would say, even if I fall. Mm-hmm. I fall in the right direction.
Fall in the right direction.
Even if you do fall today, yesterday's not lost. And just because you make that mistake today doesn't mean you make it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or at least you don't have to. You go and keep making it.
Right.
And we'll still be here.
Right.
You know,
right.
And when I fall, I know the people around me are going to catch me as well. And that's what having a support network is supposed to be.
That's right, man. So obviously me and you, we work together. We've been working together. We've been doing some amazing things. I'm co-founder, Rise Together. We talked about Rise Together in the last episode. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. But before we even get into that, man, like, where you been last year? Everybody's asking me. Everybody, you know, I see you quite
just
often, actually.
Just because somebody is not on Facebook does not always mean it's a negative thing. Literally, January of this year, it was one of those things where it was start of the new year.
Yeah.
And Anthony and myself, we were out in Denver, and I really just took a look at priorities. I looked at where I was going, where I wanted to take a break in my life. And frankly, I was spending too much time on my phone. So I cut out a good 2 hours a day. I thought it was going to be really hard at first. And yeah, I miss staying in contact with a larger net of people. But you know what? It's been really refreshing. Yes, someday I'll come back to the world of Facebook. It will not be tomorrow.
So wait. So you're saying that you're not on Facebook,
and your life is okay? I don't take selfies anymore. I have a lot more data on my phone.
And you're the selfie king, man.
I was up there. I was up there with royalty, at least. So.
Dude, your selfie game was on fire.
The
fire emoji.
Right? Yeah, you don't even know what's happening. Now we got Facebook Live.
I come back, I just don't want to break the internet. That's all.
Oh!
Yeah, I'm going to put that up there. No, for real, though. I mean, my driving's
got
been a lot safer
likes.
without texting or taking selfies. So it's a positive thing, with all jokes aside, on a lot of different levels. And frankly, guys, I still have a phone number if you ever want to reach out to me. It doesn't always have to be through social media. That's the way I look at it.
You mean people can call and leave a voicemail? Do
or
people do that anymore?
Or they can email you and just be like, is
can
Doug
they
okay?
Actually speak to you?
No, don't call me. I can't stand talking on the phone. You can text all you want.
Just text. See, I'm opposite. You got to call me.
Right.
So if you're texting me, you're going to get some really short answers and be like, that guy's a jerk. Anyways, so you're not on Facebook. You're doing all right. You know what I mean?
Like,
what
is newly engaged. Well, not newly anymore. That live studio audience.
Engage. Tell me more, man. That's life changing.
Well, you were there, but I will tell you more. No, Elizabeth and I, we decided to really make it official. I couldn't ask for a better partner in life. She gives me not only her love, but also the love of an amazing 7-year-old little girl named Brooklyn.
She's amazing.
And truly couldn't be happier, guys, as far as my personal life has gone. And I think that's where we're going to take kind of the basis of this show. I'm going to go back really nitty gritty roots today, stuff you've never even heard. And I think we're just going to talk about the innocence of childhood and where that gets lost somewhere, or maybe sometimes stolen, if you will.
Man, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You know, I know we talk, obviously, almost quite often all throughout the week, almost every day. We've shared some amazing times together. We've also shared some very difficult times together. You know, doing this, you know, grasping onto this idea that we could change the world. I mean, I was just on my friend, he has a podcast, like a business entrepreneur podcast, and he asked me, you know, how did it start? And I started with you, man, right? Going to Post Crescent.
It started with us.
Reading the paper. Being inspired by your story and then like realizing that we had a lot in common, you know? And man, Doug, like think about it. And we talk about this all the time. Most people don't hear this. Is like, I was getting out of a really difficult situation in my life, thinking about giving up, thinking about like letting everything go, including my children. And I knew that's what would have happened. I probably actually, if there is a real conversation that if we did not meet, we wouldn't have continued the way that we did. And we could potentially be dead today.
Oh, I believe that with every fiber of my being. You truly look at it, you talk about you wanting to go back. I was grasping on to recovery like a life vest in an ocean. And I had
just to, out of prison.
It was
right?
One of those things, like, you want to talk about finding your spirituality. I found recovery as my spirituality before I ever found God, because I didn't believe that God could forgive me like that. So to me, it was grabbing on to any... I was grabbing onto an idea that this was out here. So for as much as you always say that, you know, yeah, if it wasn't for me, that you would have been tossed back into the whirlwind or the rodeo, mm-hmm. if you will, known as addiction. If I went to meet you, I don't know if I would have believed it was real. It would have kind of been like Santa Claus to me.
Right.
It was something that was a magical, amazing idea. But was it just BS in the end? I think that was the hardest thing to truly grasp. And you showed me that light, and it was friendship. I mean, you want to talk about some of the most simplistic things in the world. It was friendship, and that's what it's always been. That's what it's, in my heart, I know it always will be, is it was surrounded by a friendship. It was an idea that blossomed into a friendship, and that's all it needed.
That's
to
where
be.
It started, man.
That's all
right?
It needed to be.
Like, did we ever? I mean, we started talking through Facebook when you were still on, right?
Yes,
and it was just.
I know. I met my best friend on Facebook, and I met my future wife on Facebook. Really, I conquered Facebook level, so I don't need anywhere
right,
else to be.
Right. You know, and that connection, though. I mean, where did it start? It didn't start with the idea of like starting a business together. No. But man, like, remember that time we got together, like, literally around
Anthony,
that kitchen
we sat
table,
at
the like,
kitchen table
and we
drew,
exploded ideas.
We drew advertisements for billboards.
Yeah, and we're gonna do this and that and this and if anybody else was sitting in the room, and I know Nadine's in the house and she's laughing at us right now, but
she
I know
was
she
the only one she, that was the fly on the wall.
Right. I mean, if she like she's laughing effect. Right now, but I mean, when she met us. At Copper Rock mm-hmm. in Appleton, and we were like, man, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to change the community this way. She thought maybe we had horns or, like, we were aliens or, like, well, definitely crazy, right?
Crazy for sure. her crazy fits are crazy, though, so I think that's great. Let's talk about being, so we're talking out of Bellevue, Wisconsin right now, and I'm going to do a little inside joke. Do you know how close we are? And we're in a tiny studio, and Tyler lives right over there. So, Tyler, when you hear this, much love.
Tiny studio, we're in the house.
Couldn't have done it without you. But I think that's truly what it was even I look back on it, and I look back to like our first postcards, and it was just me and you shaking hands in the front. I'm just like, that was it. It was just, we have no other way to market us except to market us.
Yeah.
And
story.
No, it wasn't about a business. You used to Superman change out of... very right. nice dress clothes into jeans and t-shirts right. to go speak in between, and you really pulled it off, and it's one of those things, and I'm sure we'll cover more of it, but if you look back to the grassroots approach, it was very much that. It was guerrilla marketing in the easiest ways with flyers and posters.
I'm really speaking anywhere, message. Right? Like
anywhere,
like street corners, Boys and Girls Club, like
YMCA parking lot.
Right. Somebody's car, like in a coffee shop, at treatment centers, prisons. Dude, remember when we were going to prisons, man? That
no,
was intense.
No.
But
do you remember? So we finished up a heroin summit, and it's like 10:30 at night after speaking to parents and stuff. And we still had like a 4-hour drive on the way back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled you aside and I said, we're going to go speak to this family's kid. And you're like, no, I'm not driving back here next week. I said, no, we're going to go right now. So 11:00 at night, we pull into these people. They pull their kid out of bed,
and there we are having like this family session,
right?
At their house, nobody like people we've never met,
never.
Like you remember how many like I remember that story, but how many times like we don't talk about that stuff?
It's
and
hard.
It's because it's a service to our community, right? Like we've gone to communities where we've met with families, mm-hmm. Parents, children, mm-hmm. off the books, off the hours, at home, in hopes. To bring home. In hopes to bring some direction, right?
I think
right?
that's where when we talk about our program, our plan, it's those stories, those things that I really hang on to
mm-hmm.
Before anything else. When I think back to those days when I want to quit Rise Together, I think back to those moments because this is the hardest job that I've ever done in my life. But for me, it's not that job. If we chose to do this, that would be one thing. I know in my heart I don't mm-hmm. choose to do this. This path has chosen me. And I don't even know if I'm perfectly sure the reasoning behind that. And it's one of those things where I don't know if mm-hmm. I need to ever know the answer. I know what I'm doing right now is not only working for me, but it's one of the best things that I've ever done for my community.
Absolutely.
And that speaks volumes because I used to be a pretty selfish person.
Man, that's beautiful. Like, your whole life has changed.
Yeah.
Your whole life has changed in part because of recovery. How awesome is that?
It started with recovery, and I truly believe that you get to a point in your life where you can celebrate recovery to the best of whatever you want that to be. And that was a big eye opener this year. So it was 6 years sober, September 10th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was the first time that I didn't have really bad using dreams, like a week mm-hmm. up to the date. It was also the first time where I didn't wake up that day. And it was the first thing on my mind. I still had a normal
we talked
day.
About that,
it was really cool to look back and be like, you know what? I just got up today and it was recovery.
Yeah.
And I got to celebrate the day because I wanted to celebrate it, not because it was the first and foremost. And there's almost a freedom that comes with that mm-hmm. where I am not, again, defined.
Well, you are free.
Right, absolutely. Right?
You're free to speak, think, talk, walk, act, be Douglas Darby.
Right.
So I'm going to...
The bad, the ugly.
It's all there, right?
It's
just you.
Right.
And with some really cool people behind you.
Right.
With an amazing person by your side, Liz, she's a sweetheart, and I'm so happy for you guys. And you know, Brooklyn, she's amazing as well.
She was
that can be difficult, and we can talk more about that some other time.
But I was raised by an amazing man that didn't have the same blood as me, and he was dad, and even the father relationship that I have with Brooklyn's natural father, it's a really cool dynamic, and it's just that understanding that we get along, and we're civil, and you know what? We're downright friendly, and we are very much compatible people because we have a very like goal, and that's that we have a 7-year-old child that we're trying to bring up in this world, mm-hmm. and that common goal should outweigh anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because your
guys' life in part is not about you anymore. Yeah. It's about that child,
right? And being raised from someone that took such a high road and truly took me on as his son.
Yeah.
I couldn't have had someone better showing me.
Yeah, he's a man. He's a man. Well, hey, man, I want you to go somewhere with me on this podcast before we get out of here. And I want you to picture, I want you to picture a snapshot of your entire life, where you've been, where you're at today. And I want you to close your eyes, and I want everybody that's listening to do this with me. And I want you to picture the 120,000 people that we've been in front of over the last 3 years. And take that moment in. And remember those stories, the tears, the heartache, the crying, the asking for help, the lack of direction, the hopelessness that we've seen in the communities. And I want you to show us your why, Douglas. I want you to show us your passion and why you do what you do. Not only just tell your story, but deep down inside, in your gut, when you know what's right, I want you to take the mic and take this stage and do what you do best.
I appreciate that, you know, and that was one of my hardest topics of discussion, if you will, over the past summer, was just to really understand what I wanted to bring for this upcoming school speaking year. I think for me, it was getting back to the root of it. And I've always enjoyed public speaking. And I wanted to go back and share some of the things that I used to highlight in my own speaking, even when I was in active addiction. It was a movement that was very close to me. And it starts out, you know, and it's one of those things where I do want you to visualize for myself as a small child, 3-4 years old, what it was truly like to be someone that is a survivor of sexual assault. And for myself, it wasn't some stranger, some scary man that jumped out of a back alleyway and grabbed me one night. For me, it was someone I loved, someone I cared about. That monster in my life was someone I called Grandpa. And it was never a violent thing. And I think that's one of the things that really sticks with me is when you talk about sexual assault, when you talk about the abuse that happens in this world, so many times you relate it to violence. Well, mine wasn't violent. Mine was something that I think was just as detrimental to my own psyche, to my own health, to my own well-being. It was a mental warfare that he played with me. It was a game. It was a game of taking an innocence from someone that didn't even understand what evil was.
Yeah.
So to me, it was very much that raw power of, you don't have to do this, Douglas, but Grandpa would really like it if you did. I mean, the guy turned it into a game.
Yeah.
And to me, it was a game. And when my grandfather left a few years later, him and my grandmother ended up splitting up. And when I say he left, there was never a phone call. There was never a birthday card. Mm-hmm. There was never a Christmas gift. There was none of those things. And he was mm-hmm. grandpa. Yes, he was, in all eyes, not blood. He was a step-grandfather. But my grandparents had been married before I was ever born. So he was the grandpa father figure in my life. Well, I turned 7 years old and he disappeared. Well, mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. When he disappeared, nobody really understood it. But because these traumatic events had happened to me at such a young age, I literally had no recollection. I never spoke up. I never talked out. And life went on. Life was great. I had mm-hmm. an amazing childhood. I was brought up with the best of mm-hmm. everything. Truly, I was a spoiled, rotten little guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I really was. And I say that with a smile on my face. My parents were amazing. They gave me mm-hmm. all the love, all the attention that I could ever ask for and still do to this day. Mm-hmm. And yes, abuse was going on in the house, and I was always told that you tell someone. I was brought up at Take Back the Night rallies. My parents knew the signs, but there were no signs. Mm-hmm. This was a man they loved and trusted, and we all did. This was grandpa. And unfortunately, there was a secret that was going on at home. Now, years go by, right?
Mm-hmm. Silence, right?
Right, silence. Yeah. And really, it wasn't even silence out of fear. It was just, it wasn't there. When I say that I didn't have recollection of it, I just truly didn't. For the good or the indifferent, I just didn't. My mother goes on to have other children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 14 years old. My brother Andrew, who you can attest to this, Andrew, still to this day,
yeah.
right there on identical, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
Andrew turns 4 years old, and I don't know if it was him. It's the only thing that I can put my hand on. That triggered something in my head.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm 14 years old. I'm in seventh grade, and I start having flashbacks. And it's images of an incident or a time, like I could never put the place with the person with the face. It was mm-hmm. all these missing pieces, right? And I knew things were going on, and now I'm scared. I'm 14 years old. I'm going through puberty. I'm going through mm-hmm. Adolescent behavior. I'm having these images of two naked men. Mm-hmm. One is an adolescent, and I'm scared. I'm 14. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm questioning my own sexuality.
Right.
I'm questioning what is going on, and it's awful.
Yeah,
I'm shutting absolutely. Down. I'm showing early, you know, yeah. almost addict mentality before even actively picking up.
Definitely not talking about it.
Right. Oh, like, you're absolutely not talking. Not. No, I'm a 14-year-old male.
God forbid you would ever talk about
America,
that. Yeah.
Right. And I knew better. I yeah. knew that my mother was also a survivor of sexual assault. I knew I could go there. Mm-hmm. I knew I could ask for help.
But you didn't.
Well, I didn't even know what was going on yet.
Yeah.
I didn't even know if there was something to ask for help or if I was maybe just deranged, you know? I mean, yeah. those were the things that I was questioning as a kid.
That's tough, man.
So I'm sitting in math class. And one day it just finally all came together. Boom, boom, boom. Wow, this happened. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, wow. Okay. So I did do the right thing. I immediately excused myself from class. I mm-hmm. walked down to the counselors and I checked myself in and I told the counselor immediately.
Immediately.
There was never a more frightening time in my life that I can remember. I walked into prison easier than making that trip mm-hmm. as a 14-year-old kid down to the counselor's office and just going, what if no one believes me?
Right. What if no one believes me? Yeah.
And I knew they would. And I still thought, mm-hmm. what if I'm the schmuck here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What if I look like the joke again?
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, and of course, they immediately call my mom. There's nothing but an outcry of support. It's amazing. The whole nine yards. And it just, you know, it was one of those things where, again, it wasn't this violent, scary thing. It was something where I don't even know if he got off on the fact that I was a little boy
mm-hmm.
or the fact that he had a power over someone.
Man.
And that's where you start to talk. And then, and you know what? I went on now. Now I'm past seventh grade. I've now lost my father going into ninth yeah. grade. And my sophomore year, I started speaking out. And they would do small school speaking seminars about sexual assault. UWGB would. And that's yeah. how I got involved with Teen Connection and had that whole yeah. story.
So it's a teenager. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's a teenager.
Yeah.
So I'd go around to local high schools, you know,
yeah.
16, 17, 18 years of age.
Yep.
And I'd sit up there with the local liaison officer and the DA of Green Bay at the time, or Brown County, DA Zykowski.
Yeah.
And I'd sit up there with my dreadlocks in the middle of my back and many times high to get through the presentation.
Yeah.
And I'd tell that very story that you just heard
yeah.
and the importance of speaking out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here I am now, I'm in active addiction by this time.
Yeah.
Speaking out on a different subject.
And in part, it kind of led you to that active right. addiction,
and
in part.
Right, and during right. my own rehab and my own inpatient, a lot of those demons got shed, and I was able to fight them off. But, you know, I remember, you know, being that 15-year-old kid and doing, like, you know, early experimenting with drinking and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And you'd show up in front of the guy's house, and, yeah, beer bottles would go through his window. And that was my redemption. That was my teenage youth acting out and trying to get my payback. It was never a want for me to go in and press charges. Mm-hmm. I didn't need that. What I always wanted is just that understanding of saying, you didn't win. Mm-hmm. I'm still a pretty great kid. In all honesty, I mean, you look at that, now everyone wants to know, well, is that the silver lining, or is that the path back to Doug's route to his addiction? No. I've always stated I got high for one reason. I liked it. And then that's just the fact of the matter. Losing my father, the sexual assault. Bad things happen in life, and they happen to a lot of people. And some people deal with them in the correct way, and some people deal with them in the incorrect way. And for many years of my life, I dealt with them in the incorrect way. And that's, I think, where we still talk about some of that hopelessness. There are still days today that I want to go back to that old way. Because that's what I know. That's what I still know will give me that instant, it'll be okay. But why don't we? Mm-hmm. Why don't we go back? I know it's not, because if I go back, he wins. Yeah. But I am destined to be my father. It's not any of those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have a breaking point.
Yeah.
I just don't think we should shame people when they hit that breaking point. It doesn't need to be that. My dad was sober for 10 years of his life. And the reason why I believe he put a rope around his own neck wasn't because of anyone else's influence. It's because of the perception he felt and the shame, guilt, and stigma he felt that was out there, where if he had to walk back into any room or to any of his support, mm-hmm. there would be a shadow of doubt or guilt or pity. Who the hell wants to feel pity?
Who? You know what I mean? Like, I literally was shedding tears listening to the story that I shared about my father earlier today. It's on the first episode, and I wanted to listen to it because I was excited. But man, like, you talk about 25 years of shame and guilt. That's what's killing my father today.
Still.
You know? And he is mentally unstable, sick, dying, asking for help, living in a system that maybe can't even provide the resources because it is so detrimental. And now here's two young men in their 30s who've started their whole life over. That at some point, Doug, we're going to walk on stage together and say we both lost our fathers to addiction.
It's one of those things, Anthony. Yeah, we most likely will do that. And then I won't discredit nor argue with you. Mm. But look at me. We might not.
Yeah, we might not.
And I'm no more right than you are. Okay? Yeah. And that's just truly what it is. You can't tell me I'm not just
right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
But that's like when I said earlier, there are days that I wake up and I wish we didn't do this job.
Absolutely.
I do. I'd have 1,000 different things that I'd rather do right now. Mm-hmm. But we're not. And we're not because this is our healing. This is that. I've known you and shared some of the deepest things, and I've never told you that story that I just shared with you today. Because there are some things I don't want to talk about.
Same here, man.
Don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know what? If you catch me just at that right moment, or give me an outlet, or just that right song sometimes, mm-hmm. maybe, just maybe, I'm going to talk about it. And when you go back to Rise Together, and what is, are we really going to bring this year, is that we're going to get some kids, maybe, just maybe, take 1 second out of their day and share their thought and their feeling, maybe for the first mm-hmm. time. And maybe they won't be waiting to do it when they're 31 years of age.
And life is
maybe old. They'll do it when they're 15. And they just realize that someone took advantage of them when they're a kid. Maybe they'll realize it when they just woke up that morning and for the first time they went, wow, I couldn't sleep in until 9 o'clock because I feel sick. Mm-hmm. I feel sick because I've been taking Vicodin for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
maybe that's the realization. Because when I woke up dope sick for the first time at 19 years of age, I did pills from 16 to 19 and never even knew what dope sick was. Mm-hmm. Woke up and went, wow, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Buckle up.
Yeah.
Because when that takes a hold, you know it just as well as I do, it's a whole different ballgame. And I feared that sickness into an 8-year heroin binge. I feared being strung out that bad where it was my end game to always walk into those pharmacies. That wasn't just a spur of the moment. That was calculated criminal activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I could get away with it.
Because
that's what my addiction told me I could do.
It was also your brain just like being like, I need this to survive, right?
It's an overload. I needed it more than anything.
Yeah. And you put everything at risk. So let's say I'm somebody right now, and this is a real thing, but I want the listeners, like if somebody came up to me and said, Douglas Darby, man, my father, my mother, my cousin, my brother, my sister, my best friend is struggling. Well, how can I support them? What would you say?
You go out and you listen to them. You use a lot of I statements.
I care about you.
I promise you to whoever that person is out there that Anthony just listed off, you relate it back to yourself. You may not have gone through whatever the loved one in addiction or struggling with mental illness has been through to get them into treatment. You may not have gone through their life, but I'm almost betting anything out there to say that you've been through something difficult in your time.
Mm-hmm.
So in a time in need, let them know how you got through that difficult moment. Relate it to yourself. Say, you know what? I don't know what you're going through, but I have been through this X. I have lost a loved one. And you know what? In my greatest time in need, this is what I did. And you may give them the wrong answer for themselves, but at least you gave them an option.
You were there.
When you're struggling with addiction, there is one option. Get high.
Mm-hmm.
Is the only option that we want. And frankly, it's the only option at that time that our body feels we need. All right. We don't need a billboard on the side of the road giving us a 1-800 number. Yeah, those things are great. What we need is options.
Mm-hmm. And we need support. We need a peer, a friend, a love and connection to the community, right?
Like I don't need a 1-800 number. I need a recovery coach to show up at my door and say, look, I heard from an ex-family member that you are looking for recovery. Guess what? Here's two options. And you know what?
That we can get you engaged with today, right? Like I'm the bridge.
Right now.
Like maybe I don't have to act as a professional.
You are the
I'm not going to provide the
of recovery.
I'm not like the treatment provider. Right. But man, if I could cross that bridge, like, hey, I love you. I know you're struggling.
Hey, to bring it full circle, if I could find a friend that would just Facebook stalk me a little bit on Facebook, reach out as my first person in recovery and say, hey, man, I get it. And you know what? Maybe you can help me too along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you need.
Yeah.
You need someone that's been through it. Someone that says, look, I get it. And you know what? It's going to be one bumpy ride.
Yeah.
And it is going to be hard.
And you know what? It's not the only answer, guys, out there that are listening to this. But I know we get asked that question a lot. Like, what can I do for the person that is struggling? Being that bridge, being there for them, loving them. I mean, if it wasn't for these two people that are sitting next to me, Nadine and Doug, my two best friends, also individuals that I'm working with on this Rise Together gig, but also in the studio today, sharing these personal testimonies and stories, it's a connection that we have for and in between all of us that keeps us strong, even during some of the most difficult times. You've been there. I've been there. I'm there now. Nadine's there right now.
What
I mean? We all are facing some really difficult things. And sometimes that human connection is so important. It's not the only answer, but it's a huge part of the answer. So, man, like, I just want to thank you for being even more open and honest than you typically are and sharing something with me as your best friend that you never have shared with me, and then also sharing that with our audience. Talking about early stage trauma, I think a lot of students that we're in front of have similar stories, right?
That's where you go back to. I don't share these stories to get them out there or again to have that pity factor. Nobody truly wants pity. People don't cut and burn because they are attention seeking. People don't say they have depression or anxiety because they want attention or because they just want to lay in bed all day. This is real stuff. And it's very common, yet it's very treatable. And I just saw that from a mental health wellness billboard since I slammed one earlier. But and in all honesty, I think it's really going back. Like, again, I don't tell these stories for any other reason is I don't want to feel too alone either. So when I tell these stories, it's in that hopes that someone comes up to me and says, hey, I have a similar story. Mm-hmm. And again, it just makes us not feel so alone.
Absolutely. Again, Doug, best friend, co-founder of Rise Together, one of the best national advocates, one of the best speakers I've actually ever had an opportunity to share the stage with. I'm excited to not only continue to be best friends and like see you on your life journey with Liz and Brooklyn and see where that goes. And now you're back in Wisconsin. Dude,
great things happen.
We're going to crush it this year. You know what I mean? I think there's a new energy.
It's going to truly be amazing.
Rise Together is back. Is that a statement that we often say lately?
I can feel it.
Things are about to change for good.
No,
right?
It's going to be amazing. Every
this
year,
might be a tipping point for us.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where I think we're going to get some security. I think we're going to, I think we just understand our roles as individuals, as a business. We're going to go back to what Rise Together started as, what it stands for. We're going to come in kicking in some doors this year. The good, bad, the ugly.
Yeah.
And that'll always be there.
So maybe show up at state meetings with flip-flops on? Can we do that again, or should we put ties on this year?
I stopped smoking, so
How many days?
It'll be 2 months on the 19th.
2 months. Dude, you're an inspiration.
Don't buy them, you won't smoke them. That's my main philosophy.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that, man. And everybody out there that's listening, if you want to check us out, just go to weallrisetogether.org. Again, that's weallrisetogether.org. You can check out Rise Together. You can check out Nadine, Doug, myself, and our team, what we're about, what we're going to do, and every different way that you can get involved. I think it's more clear than ever that our country is facing an addiction epidemic, not only right here in our own backyard, Green Bay, Wisconsin, but all across the United States. And the thing that's making a difference is the power and the unification of voices. Those that are in recovery, those that have been impacted by addiction, every single person in America, every single person in this community, every single person in Wisconsin needs to get involved today, not tomorrow, today, actually more like yesterday. I'm calling you to action, and so is Douglas Darby. Not just support for like Rise Together and the prevention work that we do, trying to prevent teen substance use all across the state and all across the nation. If you want to support that, that's cool. Go ahead. You can sign up as a supporter. That would be fantastic. But man, support this podcast. One, this is brand new, but also like support the idea of talking out and sharing your stories in your community. Maybe it's with one person, maybe it's with many. We have plenty of upcoming events that you can get engaged with, and there's other national and localized movements and recovery community centers all across Wisconsin that are taking a huge step forward. And they are making change. And it comes from a place of passion and purpose, saying that we no longer will stand for our people dying. We'll no longer put our next generation at risk. We will go out, spread a message of hope, give a voice to the voiceless, stand strong in bonded arms until they hear us from the state capitol here in Wisconsin all the way to the White House. We will command change and we'll make change. And we can't do that without you. Thank you so much. My name is Anthony Alvarado. Thank you so much for listening to Rise and Grind Recovery Radio. Have an awesome week. Thank you.